Welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. Here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Political Cesspool radio program. I am your host, James Edwards, and I've got a question for you. Are you ready for a blockbuster night of political talk radio? If you just answered yes, you are tuned in to the right show. Welcome, everybody, to the Political Cesspool. It's Saturday evening, July the 2nd, and the only thing hotter than the temperature in Memphis, Tennessee tonight is going to be our program itself. Welcome again to the show. We're coming to you live this evening from AM 1380 WLRM Radio in downtown Memphis, Tennessee, going out to the AM-FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network and simulcasting online to a worldwide audience of loyal listeners at thepoliticalcesspool.org and libertynewsradio.com. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we have not one, but two excellent guests for you. Reverend Ted Pike, our good friend from the National Prayer Network, will be on, and so will Hutton Gibson, author, World War II veteran, Jeopardy champion, and father of Mel Gibson. Hutton Gibson back on the show tonight, and we will be getting into the topics that they will be addressing a little bit later on in the show. But first, Keith Alexander and I are going to cram 3 hours worth of programming into the first hour of tonight's show. We have got a lot for you. Hold on tight, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to be a bumpy ride from now until 9 o'clock Central when we wrap this baby up. Keith, glad to have you in the co-pilot seat tonight, sir.
Great. Thank you so much, James. And we would be remiss if we didn't point out that Monday is Independence Day, July the 4th in the United States. And, of course, that's a time for reflection here at the Political Cesspool, and we think about all the liberties that we've lost over the past 50 years because of the relentless advance of liberalism. We've got Hutton Gibson, who's going to tell you about how liberalism has infiltrated, is sickening, and is causing the Roman Catholic Church to die on one hand. And then on the other side of the coin, we're going to have Reverend Ted Pike to tell you how the same malady is attacking fundamentalist Christianity now as well. Nobody is exempt from the plague, James.
Our listeners have been demanding this show. You know, we've almost apologized for the fact that we have been so preachy in the last 3 weeks. You know, we are Christians here. This is a political talk show, and sometimes there's an overlap between our faith and our political beliefs. But it seems as though that is the case of many of our those in our listening audience. They have demanded a show that we ask some very tough questions, and we're going to be asking those tough questions to authorities on the matter, Reverend Pike and Hutton Gibson. And again, ladies and gentlemen, more on that in just a bit. But first, if you've been following our blog and the articles that we post each day to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, you'll know there has been no shortage of entertainment to be found there. ABC News, I'm not talking about some obscure weekly throwaway free paper that you find in some liberal big cities. I'm talking about ABC News comes out with a special report that says America's national parks are racist. Not the administration of the national parks, the parks themselves. You know, you can file this in the I thought I'd heard it all, but I was wrong folder. ABC News reports that America's national parks are racist because slavery has forever altered the way that blacks view the soil, the ground, the soil. They actually said this with a straight face on a national news program. You had a Chinese news reporter interviewing the only black park ranger at Yosemite or Yellowstone National Park. And he was talking about the reason that blacks don't come to national parks is because the soil, Keith, is racist. We have the video footage of this ABC News story at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Keith, racist soil?
Look, I've heard of rationalizations before, but this is the craziest one yet. If they're so against the soil, why do they still like watermelons? That's the big question, you know, which are grown in the soil, okay? In other words, you're telling me that they don't go to national parks and don't work as park rangers because they're afraid somebody's going to make them pick cotton? I haven't seen a big cotton crop down at Yellowstone or Yosemite, James. I've been to both places. Let me tell you what the real reason is. You would think they would be drawn to this because it's government employment. And as we've learned from all of these budget battles that have been taking place statewide, citywide, nationwide in the United States, there's a predominance of black people working for the government at all levels. And being a park ranger is, hello, a government job. So why aren't they drawn to that? Well, they're not drawn to it. Again, if you want to know the reason, you have to look to a cesspool staffer, the one and only Winston Smith, who said their big attraction to government jobs is that it is indoor work, no heavy lifting. Now, being a park ranger is not indoor work. They don't have an air conditioner running out there that cools down Yosemite or Yellowstone or any other national park so that it's a constant 72 degrees or less in those environs. That's the only way I can think of why they don't want to be park rangers, because otherwise you get the same set of government benefits. You get Cadillac health insurance, you get a defined benefit pension, and you can't be fired for incompetence and insubordination. The holy trinity of public sector employment as far as black people are concerned, James.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, like I said, it's such a jam-packed show tonight. We can't really get into more detail than that. But if you want to leave your comments on why the soil is racist, go to thepoliticalcesspool.org and check out the blog entry entitled America's National Parks Are Racist. But that's not the only thing that's racist this week, Keith. Homework is racist, too. Yes, homework. Don't I wish that homework was racist when I was still in school? But if the soil can be racist, why not homework? The Los Angeles Unified School District, one of the biggest school districts in the country, are not going to be giving out much homework anymore because they say, and I quote now from the Los Angeles Times, the policy of eliminating homework is intended to account for the myriad urban problems facing the district's mostly low-income minority population. They also go on to quote the fact that homework is more likely to be completed by kids with a secure home life and involved parents, a.k.a. the white middle class, and therefore homework is being gradually done away with, Keith, in Los Angeles school districts because, again, according to the Los Angeles Times, urban children have a problem with homework and they don't turn it in anyway. And number two, white kids are normally do better on their homework than urban kids, quote unquote. So anyway, no more homework. Homework, it's not just that white kids do better. It's that the homework is racist. And that's something we need to remember. And that's something we need to reflect upon tonight.
Well, this is exactly what we were talking about. We've talked about this for ages. The first and foremost goal of the civil rights movement was equality between blacks and whites. And their first plan was to raise blacks up to the level of whites. Well, that hasn't worked too well. So the second phase comes in, plan B, which is to reduce whites to the level of blacks. In other words, no homework, no better grades for white folks.
We got to take that break. I'm giving Keith that signal between the glass. We're going to be back, ladies and gentlemen. Believe me, we're just getting started. Stay tuned.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Please don't understand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Ladies and gentlemen, we intend this not only to be a big show, we intend this to be one of the biggest and most important broadcasts we've ever conducted. And that's saying a lot. We've done over 1,000 of these shows since 2004. We used to be on 5 nights a week until we got picked up by network syndication. We moved to 1 day a week. But nevertheless, over 1,000 shows under our belt. And we think, I have that feeling, that tonight's show, by the time it's all said and done, is going to be one of the most important broadcasts. And that's directly a result of what Hutton Gibson and Ted Pike are going to be commenting on. Very important issues indeed. But first, Keith Alexander and I continue with also important issues, perhaps not as important as matters of faith and politics, but nevertheless, these are pretty interesting stories that you're not going to hear about anywhere else. We've established that soil is racist. Now, homework racist, too. The Los Angeles School District realizes, they said as much in the Los Angeles Times this week, that black kids aren't competing with whites academically, so the solution is to stop giving homework. Those assignments are racist. So I guess the argument is that if you can't bring everyone up to the same level, then you might as well try to bring everyone down to the same level, Keith.
That's part of it. The other part of it is this. If blacks can't excel at any particular area of human endeavor, at first we were told that those things weren't important. For example, basketball is an important sport, and American football is an important sport because blacks seem to be able to excel at it, probably because both sports put a premium on...
Locked out right now, both of them.
I know, because of the greed of the players is why they're locked out right now, according to my comment on James's comment. But, you know, both of those sports put an inordinate premium on being a large person. You know, it's not an athletic achievement to grow to be 7 feet tall or to grow to be 350 pounds, and both of those traits are very important for your future success as a professional American football player or a professional basketball player. On the other hand, baseball seems to be diminishing. It's not important because American blacks don't seem to be that interested in it or to be that good at it. Likewise, tennis, now that Venus and Serena Williams are in the twilight of their careers, there's suddenly a problem with American tennis. Likewise, if blacks don't do well at homework, well then, homework is not only irrelevant, now we've got to amp it up one more level. Homework is racist. Blacks don't come to national parks, so let's just cut out all federal funding for national parks because national parks are racist. If they don't, we've got to get all of our resources funneled and directed at black people for the benefit of black people, apparently, James.
Hey, homework is racist. National parks are racist. These are just two of the very many articles we have featured at thepoliticalcesspool.org this week. Another one very quickly. I want Eddie the Bombardier Miller, who is not going to be on the show tonight until the 8:30 Central Time segment, but he's already in the studio. Look at this picture, Eddie. Winston Smith, our co-host, he's not able to join us on the broadcast right now because he's having problems with his hearing, but he can still write. Lily White Seattle folk won't pick up an orphan gun. This is an article that we're featuring at thepoliticalcesspool.org tonight, and here's the story. Seattle's finest are a little red-faced at the photo that we show on our website. It's a picture of a Seattle police cruiser with what looks like, an AK-47 on the trunk, and they were driving around town. The police mistakenly left this, weapon on their trunk and were driving around town with it. But the thing is, the only thing taken was a photo. Seattle is a notoriously hyper-liberal, lily-white city, and most people there would rather kiss Eddie the Bombardier Miller then touch that gun. In contrast, if this had happened in Memphis or Atlanta or Detroit, then that gun would have disappeared in about 2 seconds, and 10 minutes later, it would have been used at a school or a park or an arts festival. Kudos to the honkies in Seattle. Way to represent. That's Winston Smith, and he got in a little love there for Eddie.
Well, I love Winston myself. I love him, too. Well, wish you could.
All right, I just had to show that to Eddie real quick. Eddie showed up to work 2.5 hours early tonight, so I had to invoke his name some way. But that is actually on the website tonight. Pretty cool picture too. You got a big assault rifle, if you will, on the back of a trunk of a police car. No one took it; they just took a picture of it.
Let me tell you this: the police in Seattle apparently don't drive like the integrated police force here in Memphis, because that assault rifle apparently was they were driving through town and it remained on the trunk all of that time. In Memphis, it wouldn't have lasted through one curve. It would have been thrown out about 500 yards probably with the G-force that the Memphis police cars go around our corners here in Memphis, James.
Well, listen, like I said, we got such a big show tonight that we're not going to be able to cover all of the great articles that we featured for you. You know, we update our website every day with two or three articles in between our weekly broadcast here on Saturday. There's always updated and fresh new content for you at thepoliticalcesspool.org. And typically, we feature nothing stale. We feature a lot of these articles in our commentary on the show each Saturday night. We're not going to be able to do that tonight, though, because we have Hutton Gibson, we have Ted Pike, and they're going to be dominating a big portion of the pie tonight. But these are just a couple of the articles we've been featuring. Winston Smith actually had another very interesting article about a Polish Catholic priest who offended Jews without even mentioning them. I don't know if y'all read that one, Keith and Eddie. I'm sure y'all did, being co-hosts. You read everything we put up, right? Yeah. But yeah, Keith says he does. Anyway, the very interesting article there. You've heard about flash mobs where all these people get together and they sing in odd locations and then they disperse, you know, without an area. Yeah, that's a white flash mob. Well, a black flash mob just got together at a Sears department store in Philadelphia, and they ransacked the store and stole about everything they had in 40 seconds and then left. We got an article about that up.
Made Genghis Khan's Mongol horde.
Keith said it made Genghis Khan's Mongol horde pale in comparison. But there's so many other things up there tonight. You got to check it out. ThePoliticalCesspool.org is the website. Can't get to much more than that this evening because Keith has a couple of articles to bring to your attention that were not featured on the website. And we got a couple of minutes left in this segment and then a little bit more time left in the first hour that we have with Keith. So I'm going to turn it over to him now.
Well, I, like James, am anticipating what Hutton Gibson and Ted Pike are going to bring to the table. We're going to have Christendom covered both from the Roman Catholic perspective and from the fundamentalist Protestant perspective. And unfortunately, the same problems that bedevil one segment of Christianity also bedevil the other. And, of course, we don't have anybody from mainline Protestantism because, quite frankly, I don't believe there are any conservative holdouts left in those congregations. People have been leaving those denominations in droves over the past 50 years. There's a great book about that if somebody wants to read it called The Empty Church by Thomas Reeves, that's R-E-A-V-E-S, who has since converted to Roman Catholicism, who was an Episcopalian before. But look that book up on Amazon or Google or whatever you can and read it if you want to find exactly what both the Roman Catholics and the fundamentalists have in store for them if the disease follows the progress that it made through the mainstream Protestant denominations. Now, the segments that we've got, and we're going to start this thing off, it was provoked by an email from a TPC fan named Jen in Pennsylvania. Jen said that Keith Alexander is always hammering on the point that all liberalism is bad and has destroyed society, and his point is that you cannot reject liberalism but accept Brown versus Board. She is a Roman Catholic, and she thinks, or at least went to Latin Mass based on what we were talking about, and what she drew from that was a sermon where they were talking about immodesty in women's dress, and she wanted us to tackle the topic of whether the Reformation was the first manifestation in the modern European world of liberalism. And we're going to get back to that right after these important messages from our sponsors.
That's it, ladies and gentlemen. Keith Alexander setting the table like a champ. You could host this show, man. Come on, what am I even doing here? Stay tuned, everybody. Important important commentary, opinion, and analysis ahead, as only we can provide it.
Guys, we'll be back right after these messages. The heck is it? Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. We gotta
get out of this place. All right, everybody. We are just beginning to get started tonight. You are tuned in to the right radio show, the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards, and I couldn't be prouder of that fact. Keith Alexander joining me during tonight's first hour. Keep in mind, Hutton Gibson will be on our show in just a little while in the second hour tonight. Mel Gibson's father. The last time he was on our show, he's made two appearances. Tonight will be his third appearance on the Political Cesspool. The last time he was on our show, what he said was covered by over 150 newspapers around the world, as well as numerous television programs such as Jimmy Kimmel Live and Entertainment Tonight. I can remember getting a call from the owner of Liberty News Radio Network saying, James, Entertainment Tonight wants to talk to you. And I talked to him about the Hutton Gibson interview. That's how big an appearance from Hutton Gibson is. And he is going to be on tonight to address matters of faith and apostasy, heresy, politics. Why did the Roman Catholic Church, why did the Catholic Church run from the fight over sodomite so-called marriage in New York? Hutton's going to talk about this. And I'll tell you, the reason I invited Hutton on the show tonight came from an email I got from a young lady named Jen, and Keith was just referencing her right before the last commercial break, but she's had a big impact on tonight's show.
She has, and Jen, I hope you're listening tonight. To get to your basic question about was the Reformation the first manifestation of liberalism in the modern Western world, that will depend upon whether you consider the Reformation a liberal, progressive, left-wing movement or a reactionary, conservative movement. Protestants tend to think that it's a conservative movement, an attempt to get back to what C.S. Lewis called mere Christianity because of various abuses and corruption within the Roman Catholic Church. Now, I don't totally buy that. On the other hand, was the Reformation a liberal movement that was attacking an established institution, the church? Well, let me tell you, liberalism, at least from the time of the French Revolution onward, was decidedly and markedly anti-Christian in all of its manifestations. In the French Revolution, they turned the churches into cathedrals for their own state religion. They changed the calendar, and they persecuted priests and nuns. I've got an interesting book that I would like to discuss with you. It was by a Southerner named Richard M. Weaver, who was a professor of philosophy at the University of Chicago in the 20s, 30s, 40s, and early 50s. And in 1948, he wrote a book that is very influential among a lot of conservatives called Ideas Have Consequences. And in that book, and it's only about 150 pages, he takes the position that liberalism began with the thinking of William of Ockham, who was a adversary of St. Thomas Aquinas. Ockham, who is most famous for the idea called Ockham's razor, which is that the simplest explanation is usually the most correct explanation for any phenomenon that you encounter. He was also a proponent of what's called nominalism versus St. Thomas Aquinas, who believed in absolute truth. Now, we don't really want to get into an arcane breakdown of all of that, but Jen, if you're listening, I would suggest that you do read Ideas Have Consequences. It's all about the decline of the West, which Richard Weaver, who was a Southerner and a Roman Catholic, attributed to nominalism and the changes that that wrought within the church and consequently within European society. Now, let me then address the second thing that Jen was talking about. Yeah, okay. Sola Ecclesia, only the church versus Catholicism.
Tell him Eddie's passing notes in the class.
Eddie is and shooting spitwads, too. Now, here, let me get back to the second thing, which is how I say liberalism is of one whole cloth and that you can't accept part of liberalism without letting the whole camel of liberalism into your tent. You let the camel's nose into the tent. And how Brown versus Board of Education is just as pernicious as gay marriage. Well, the left certainly thinks they're all of one cloth, too. We have an article by Jeff Jacoby, who is supposedly the House conservative, and I put that conservative in quotes, at the Boston Globe. If he is a Boston Globe conservative, that means that in Memphis he'd be a raving lunatic leftist. But in this, and of course, he's a good son of Israel, too. His father was a Holocaust survivor, I read on Wikipedia, and he makes weren't a big deal of that. Yeah, as James says, weren't they all? But here is what he says. He says, same-sex wedlock became lawful in New York last week after the state legislature passed a bill recognizing otherwise valid marriages without regard to whether the parties are of the same or different sex. Governor Andrew Cuomo, that's the son of Mario Cuomo, the former governor, a fervent proponent of gay marriage, signed the bill into law immediately. No one was a fervent proponent of gay marriage 44 years ago when the Supreme Court ruled unanimously that laws barring whites and blacks from marrying were unconstitutional. Same-sex marriage wasn't even a fringe issue on June the 12th, 1967, the day the court handed down the landmark decision in Loving v. Virginia, invalidating anti-miscegenation statutes on the books in 16 states, basically southern states, as invidious racial discrimination, repugnant to the 14th Amendment. If anyone had suggested to Chief Justice Earl Warren or his colleagues that in refusing to allow Virginia to continue perverting its marriage laws out of racial bigotry, they were prohibiting the way to gay and lesbian marriages, they would have been incredulous. Well, you know what? This is one of James's signature points. He says that if you have Loving versus Virginia, you're going to have gay marriage eventually. And the left has jumped on this with both feet. They say, exactly, this is exactly the same thing. And if you are opposed to gay marriage, you're Lester Maddox or Bull Connor or one of these great pro-segregation bogeymen. And this is exactly what we've come to expect through the years. You let in one part of liberalism, and the next thing you know, you're endorsing gay marriage. And whenever the left runs into choppy waters, into rough sailing on any of their radical egalitarian issues, like homosexuals are the same as or just as good as heterosexuals, illegal immigrants are the same as or just as good as lawful citizens, criminals are the same as or just as good as lawful citizens, women are the same as men, plants and animals are the same as or just as good as human beings, that's called environmentalism. Well, they always run back to Safe Harbor, which is the civil rights movement, and say, you're just the same old bigoted people now that you were back in 1950. And they're, you know, what the left used to defeat American conservatism was a divide and conquer strategy. They said, don't worry about Loving versus Virginia. That's just directed at these backward hillbilly redneck troglodytes in the South. It's not going to affect you. We don't want you asking serious questions about what the consequences of this decision will be. But if you did, you might see that, you know, as John Donne, the English Elizabethan poet, said, ask not for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee. That's exactly what happened in the Loving versus Virginia decision. Basically, you lost all control of marriage. The state couldn't get in, you know, all state restrictions that did not comport with libertinism and complete lack of controls are now bigotry, and that's why we have gay marriage today. And you can't even predict where the future will go. It may be bestiality. I can see some Roman Catholic priest or Episcopal priest or Southern Baptist pastor looking with blissed out beatitude on some couple and pronouncing solemnly in church, I now pronounce you man and sheep. Okay, this is what happens with liberalism. And quite frankly, rather than assuming that anything that comes from the South is invalid, conservatives should say if it comes from the South, it has a presumption of validity. The South, or Red State America as it's called today, is a repository of true conservatism in America. And if you are a conservative, you really want Red Staters leading the nation rather than being marginalized and driven away from the levers of power. Back to you, James.
Gotta take a break, ladies and gentlemen. If only they could see my cue for you to wrap it up, we gotta go to break, Keith. They
obscenity laws wouldn't allow it.
Gotta take a break. We'll be back, ladies. Stay tuned.
We gotta take a break. place. Girl, there's a better life.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's dime, toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, I tell you, we're already in the time warp. It seems hard to believe that we only have one segment remaining this evening with Keith Alexander. But that time has come upon us, Keith. And I tell you, you know, we were talking a few minutes ago about all of the just incredible stories that are featured at our website this week, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Racist soil, racist homework. How about...
Racist
national parks. Howard University. Now, this is an institution of higher learning. Washington, D.C., it's Howard University. It's long been championed as one of the top historically black universities in the country. And each year they participate in the summer in something called a Caribbean Festival. And anyway, if you want to see how African-American scholars, behave, we encourage you to do that at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Just check out the article entitled Scholars Brawl at Howard University. And as the video shows you, it's a 7-minute-long video. When they're not punching each other, throwing chairs at each other, or shooting each other, I'm sure they're quite studious.
Yeah, you got to remember, too, that Howard University is supposed to be the Harvard of the HBCUs, of the historically black colleges and universities. And this is supposedly the best of the best, or the best of the lot, when it comes to historically black colleges and universities. I mean, this is totally indistinguishable from a Pier 6 brawl, if you ask me. And, all I can do is tell you to take a look at it. You know, a picture is worth 1,000 words, as they say. Yeah, so if a picture is worth 1,000 words, what is a video worth? A 7-minute of video. Now, let's get back to what we were talking about before, James, which was the... idea that somehow there's a linkage between the Loving versus Virginia case, which outlawed anti-miscegenation laws as being unconstitutional. And again, just like the Brown case, I'm sure that the Congress that crafted the 14th Amendment would have been very, incredulous to hear that. In the Brown versus Board of Education case, Justice Frankfurter and the NAACP tried to argue that somehow the people that had the 14th Amendment, or that crafted the 14th Amendment, were against school segregation, when the actual historical record shows that Eddie, calm down. Eddie is watching this video and he's going berserk. But the James was talking about. But let's get back in the Brown versus Board of Education case. In the Brown versus Board of Education case, they tried to argue that segregated schools were somehow in the minds of the crafters of the 14th Amendment when they. When they drafted the 14th Amendment, when actually the very same Congress created a segregated school system in Washington, D.C. that very same year. So consequently, I'm sure they didn't have anti-miscegenation laws on their radar at that time either, and if they had been, they probably would have approved them. But now, Jeff Jacoby, the neocon Jewish so-called conservative for the Boston Globe, says, of course, anti-miscegenation laws and same-sex marriage are totally different, and he tries to argue that, but he sounds a little bit like King Canute commanding the waves not to break on the shore. It's not a convincing argument at all. Now, we know what Jeff Jacoby said. Now, let's see what a real conservative, Pat Buchanan, says in an article that he just wrote on 7/1/2011, that's yesterday, called The Death of the Moral Community. The opponents of same-sex marriage have no case other than ignorance Misconception and Prejudice. So writes Richard Cohen, I wonder what his ethnicity is, in his celebratory column about Governor Andrew Cuomo's role in legalizing gay marriage in New York State. Now, given that no nation in 20 centuries of Christendom legalized homosexual marriage, and in this century, majorities in all 31 states where it has been on the ballot have rejected it, Cohen is pretty much saying that since the time of Christ, Western history has been an endless dark age dominated by moral ignoramuses and bigots. For the belief that homosexuality is unnatural and immoral, and same-sex marriage is an Orwellian absurdity, has always been part of the moral code of Christianity. Okay, and then he goes into other things and said, but what is the moral basis for the argument that homosexuality is normal, natural, and healthy? In recent years, it has been associated with high levels of AIDS and enteric diseases, and from obits in gay newspapers, early death. Where is a successful society where homosexual marriage is normal? Not until the Stonewall riots at a gay bar in Greenwich Village in 1969 was the case broadly made by anyone but the far left that homosexuality deserved to be treated as a natural and normal expression of love. Still, Cohen is not without a point when he uses the term prejudice. As Albert Einstein observed, common sense is a collection of prejudices acquired by age 18. By 14, most boys have learned that on the playground that there is something disordered about boys sexually attracted to other boys. Hence the need for politically correct universities to purge such ideas from young minds and indoctrinate them in the new truths of modernity. Then he quotes Edmund Burke. Many of our men of speculation, instead of exploding general prejudices, employ their sagacity to discover the latent wisdom that prevails in them. Maybe the almost universal condemnation of homosexuality represents the accumulated wisdom of the human race rather than bigotry, prejudice, and backwardness, which is what liberals think. Now, he also says in here, for example, about, he said that General George Washington ordered active homosexuals drummed out of his army. Thomas Jefferson equated homosexuality with rape. Not until 2003 did the Supreme Court declare that homosexual acts were a protected right. Now, here's some more of Pat Buchanan on the subject. In our new society from which traditionalists are seceding, many ruling ideas are rooted in an ideology that is at war with Burke's general prejudices, which Burke saw as a plus, not a minus, in society. High among them is that homosexuality is natural and normal. That's what we're seceding from, in other words. That abortion is a woman's right. That all voluntary sexual relations are morally equal. That women and men are equal, and if the former are not equally represented at the apex of academic, military, and political life, this can only be the result of invidious discrimination that the law must correct. That all races, religions, and ethnic groups are equal, and all must have equal rewards. Once a nation synonymous with freedom, the new America worships at the altar of equality. Radical egalitarianism, as we call it here on the political cesspool. Writing on the same Washington Post page as Cohen a day earlier, Greg Sargent exulted in Cuomo's law as a huge victory for equality, a major defeat for those self-described conservatives who hate government except when it is enforcing a form of legalized hatred and discrimination that comports with their prejudices. Sargent also has a point, but behind the prejudices of conservatives about the moral superiority of traditional marriage are 2,000 years of history and law. What is the, it's probably more than that, okay? Show me the world religion that says that homosexuality is the equivalent of heterosexual marriage, or that homosexual marriage is to be celebrated, something to be proud of. Remember, gay pride and not be ashamed of is not a sin. He claims majorities of Americans are not prepared to assign subpar status to the intimate relationship of gays and lesbians. Really? I tell you what, he doesn't live in Memphis, Tennessee. He doesn't live in red state America. This is another reason why we continue to come back to the idea that our ancestors were right and we really are two nations. If there is a nation up there called blue state America where people actually believe what Mr. Sargent says, that homosexual marriage is the same as heterosexual marriage, and that they're both equally worthy of respect and protection by the law, then it's a country in which I would be a complete and total alien, and I think most of the listeners of this radio show would be, that this is why our ancestors strove righteously, I would offer, to secede from the loveless marriage that the Federal Union had become. If you had people that think like Richard Cohen and Greg Sargent, who are in charge of society in Blue State America, we need to get out. This is the this is sick. And, you know, I don't want to go to hell in a handbasket with them. Now, you know, James, here's another thing he says, that Buchanan says. He says, a new kind of America is emerging in the early 21st century, says Archbishop Charles Caput of Denver last week, and it's likely to be much less friendly to religious faith than anything in the nation's path. He added pointedly, if the Catholic social services should be forced to alter their Catholic beliefs on marriage, the family, social justice, sexuality, and abortion, they should terminate those services. Prediction, we're entering an era where communities will secede from one another and civil disobedience on moral grounds will become as common as it was in the days of segregation. Again, going back to segregation, you need to rethink all that, people out there in Blue State America, people even in Red State America. It's not what you've been led to believe. Quite frankly, everything is an assault on traditional values. And again, I predict that the Roman Catholic Church, what's the old saying, when all is said and done, more will be said than done. They'll go along with it just like they went along with Father Grappi and the Berrigan brothers and Father Flager and Father Maloney. They'll do nothing, in other words. They won't enforce any type of Christianity on them. Back to you, James.
That's all the time we got for this hour, Keith, but I tell you, he mentioned the Roman Catholic Church. We're going to be speaking to an authority on the matter, Hutton Gibson, in the second hour. Stay tuned. It's coming right up.
The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Self-Righteous Church in that sleeping little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting,
hallelujah.
Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit of the looms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the A.